So last time we ended off, Shir, with the question of whether Chumrat Rabbi Zeira was a formal takana or remained a minhag. It seems pretty clear that it started off as a minhag, but the question was, is whether it was ever formally instituted, legislated as a takana. We noted from the Lashon of a number of Rishonim that they maintained that it was formally legislated. Perhaps originally it was a minhag, but it became a takana. We noted from other Rishonim that they perhaps disagree and held that it remains begeder minhag. Now, is there any nafkamina to this question? Everybody's going to agree that it's something that must be observed. Nobody's going to say that it's something that could be ignored. So the possible nafkamina would be in certain cases, extreme shasat chaks perhaps, where if it's a minhag, we could say ki agavna lo nagu, whereas if it's a formal takana d'rabbanan, so we would not be able to say that. And you find many cases where poskim on things that are minhag say that ki agavna lo nagu, in cases, for example, b'makom choli, even chol hashem bo sakana, we frequently say ki agavna lo nagu. For example, if you assume fasting on the minor fast days is begeder minhag, so we say that lo nagu b'makom chol hashem bo sakana. Or for kitnios, we say a similar thing. According to many poskim, you could be makel on kitnios because they never accepted upon themselves this minhag b'makom choli. So do poskim do this? So the most famous of the poskim to consider such an option is the Galia Masechta. The Galia Masechta, Siman Dalid, and he says, Iker Memra de Rebbe Zeira lo hava mitakanas chachamim el benos Yisrael lechmir al atzman chumra zume atzman ulefikach roi lanu lomar bepshitas al inyan chumra de Rebbe Zeira lebenakel niftarin mimena hainu b'chol inyan uv'chol makom sheyeshe eiz etzad lahakel. Since it's a minhag, if there's a tzad lahakel, we could be makel. The context that he's discussing isn't orthodox infertility. Again, what is orthodox infertility? So the mitzias is that a woman can only become pregnant around the time she's ovulating. And if she ovulates before she could go to the mikvah, which will sometimes happen if she has a very short cycle, typically this will not happen. Typically she'll ovulate after she comes back to the mikvah within a relatively short period of time, obviously depending on the length and regularity of her cycle. But if a woman has a very short cycle, so what might happen is that she ovulates before she goes to the mikvah. Let's just think of an example. Let's imagine a woman has a 22-day cycle. That's very short. So if she takes, from the time she starts menstruating, you have to wait 5 days, we'll see, at least if she's Ashkenazi, before she does have Siktara, and then 7 days of Shivanakiyam. So 5 and 7 is 12 days, right? Now, the truth is, we'll see later on, that the 5-day Chumra based off the Shema Sedeshin is something we are willing to be makel on B'Shasat Chak if it's possible to get a Hef Siktara earlier. But even if you shave away that 1 day, so, okay, goes down to 11 days. Well, 11 days after she starts menstruating, so she goes to the mikvah, but she has a 22-day cycle, so she will have a couple days where she's muteres before she becomes a nid again, but it will be probably after she goes to the mikvah after she ovulates. Usually you ovulate about 2 weeks before you menstruate, so that being the case, it's not going to work for her. She won't become pregnant. Obviously, that's a huge, huge, huge shasat chak. And we would do anything that we possibly could to help her. In fact, there's a famous tshuva from Rosh Shlomo Zalman. I included it in your Mar Makomos, primarily in Kuf Peches, on Ro Adam B'Shvofaris, where he tries to come up with all sorts of very creative theories as to how to help such a woman. So one possibility is shofaris. Another possibility is coloring her blood blue. All sorts of interesting things, right? How could we help this poor woman? How could, it's mamish. It's geferlach. Emotionally, also prove it was a mitzvah rabbah. It's a terrible thing. So maybe we could do away with Chumrad Reb Zera. Now, the truth is that won't help you too much, because if she anyway bled for 3 days, then there's Takanas Rebbe, which would require Shiva Nikiyim. And if it's only 2 days, then you could still only shave off one more day because of 6 days. But sometimes in cases like this, every day counts. So one way or the other, though, so perhaps you don't get so much, or perhaps even Rebbe is not a Takana Kavua. And I would say, what do you mean? How could Rebbe not be a Takana Kavua? It's no, that wasn't a Minhag. That was Takanas Rebbe. So that goes back to the question we referred to last time. He was misakin an Am Shebesadus. Maybe if you live in a city with a Talmud Chacham and Bnei Torah and the like, so his Takana also doesn't apply, in which case maybe you could follow Dina de Oraisa, in which case Dina de Oraisa, for sure, she'll be okay. So that's the question. So the Galia Masechta certainly opens up the possibility of leniency. There's a tshuva from Rav Kook in Das Kohen. I also sent that to you in your Mamakomos. He doesn't quite say it's mutter, but he does perhaps open up the door. Din ze hinam kechol yisurei derabanan v'ulai af kal yoser she'enu ela minhag shenagu b'nos Yisrael. In other words, he concludes, halach l'maisa, that it's begader minhag, and therefore possibly more kal. The source that addresses this at length in the context of Orthodox infertility is the Kuntres Shiurim, which was also on Yomar Makomos, I think, at the end of Kiddushin. We don't usually think of Rav Gusman as a sefer in terms of psak, but he was certainly Rawi to be a posek. He was a kayadua, a dayan on Rav Chaim Ozer's based in at like the age of 22 or 18 or something like that. I forget, 18, right? Right. It's an amazing thing. So anyway, so obviously he's a big lamdin, but here he tries to argue, and he basically says maybe we could be makel, and of course he puts all the blame on the Galia Masechta. You know, I would never say this, but Hashta, once the Gadol Galia Masechta said it, so then, you know, then maybe we could rely on this. It's true, the Galia Masechta only said that if other poskim agree, which is a point that Rav Shlomo Zalman brings up. So I'm not going to read to the whole thing. It's very kedai to read, very fascinating. But for the most part, this opinion was not accepted. And Rav Shlomo Zalman shows how most Achronim did not accept the Galia Masechta. And even the Galia Masechta only said it if others agree. And he said, look, others don't agree. That's in that same tshuva that I referred to before. And he says that, assuming at the very least it is a takana kvua, though it's a din derabanan, we can't be mako for din derabanan even if the situation is quite tragic. In other words, maybe you would say, okay, naniach, it's a din derabanan. But we're more mako for din derabanan. For example, for some dinim derabanan, we say b'makom choli lo tiknu on a number of dinim derabanan, like taking medicine on Shabbos or fasting on Tisha B'Av, perhaps, or the like. So we do have cases where dinim derabanan we do treat more mako, but Rosh Zalman basically says unless there's evidence that in this particular din derabanan we are mako, like the principle of Shvus to Shvus on Shabbos, where we are Mako, B'makom Hesed, or Mitzvah, or the like. But unless you have evidence that this is one of the Din D'Rabbanan where built into the rules there are leniencies or exceptions or the like, then the fact that this is a super-duper Shasat Chak doesn't give you the right to just ignore the Din D'Rabbanan. He quotes the Maharsham, who gives a number of examples of this. For example, makom chash hotzas isha mi baila, like in this case, perhaps they won't even stay married if she's unable to have children. Still, you can't be megal. For example, let's say a woman lives in a town where there's no kosher mikvah. You can't leave. So would we say, okay, this is a huge shasatchak, she can't be with her husband, so we'll be mekel on mayim she'uvim. I'll let her go into the bathtub, right? It's not so hard to find a mikveh that's probably kosher mideraisa. It's not particularly hard to make. So let her go in the bathtub, let her use mayim she'uvim, because after all, there's no kosher mikveh. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to be together. They won't have children and the like. No. A woman who has something that's a chatzitza midrabanan, let's say miyudu makbid. So, again, if we could come up with a reason why it's not a chatzitza, we might say, shasat chak, you'll somech on a das yachid. But, you have to know the gedarim of das yachid for that also. But if we can't, we don't just say, okay, look, this is a huge shasat chak, so b'chia gavna, we can basically ignore the din d'rabbanan. No, we don't say that. We don't say that. There's no, you can't ignore, you can't a din d'rabbanan, even in a shas hadchak gadol ad me'od. And that being the case, so even though here, I certainly agree it's a tragic situation, and that's why I myself am going to write the 50-page kuntras trying to come up with some etzah, but this doesn't work. This doesn't work. It's interesting, it doesn't quote Lashonis of the Rishonim, but as we saw, most Rishonim do seem to explicitly state that it was a takana. And he says, what about the Galya Masechta? So he says, V'afal gav demash masham bedvarav shemitzadeh lahakel gam le'inyan zeh mikomakom nira l'nias daiti shegam agav rabba dekavasei ein l'smoch bezeh b'shum panim v'ofen kevan hu atzmo lo kasel chidesh zeh el al tenai im yiskablu hadvarim be'enei hachachamim v'rei chazinan shetiferes l'moshe v'chsam sofer v'chulei. All those achronim that he quoted earlier who reject this, so therefore we can't rely on the Galya Masechta. As I mentioned, in this tshuva he considers other possibilities to be megil, and we'll discuss those in Kuf Pei Ches. Now, it happens to be that Baruch Hashem, it's much less of a problem nowadays. Why is that? Because nowadays, using hormones, drugs, they most, more often than not, almost in all cases of orthodox infertility, could basically change the length of her cycle, make her cycle a little longer, such that she won't ovulate until after she gets back from the mikvah. And so, Baruch Hashem, nowadays, medically, for the most part, this problem could be addressed and could be solved. And women with short cycles are generally able to conceive and have children in terms of that. Another fascinating issue that comes up at the end of our siman, quoted by the Beis Yosef, is a Tshuvas HaRivash that talks about Tvila for Pnuyos, which is a hot-button issue nowadays. Sadly, there are people who are quasi-observant of halacha, meaning to say that they are concerned about something like an Isser Kares, and therefore they would not want to sleep with a man when they're in Nida, but they're not concerned, at least sufficiently concerned, about other Isurim, such as having Tashmish Amita while unmarried. Now is not the time to discuss the nature of that Isser. Is it an Isser Deraiser, an Isser Rabbanan, the Machlokas Rambam Ravid, and the like, Yichud? But it's certainly Asser, certainly Asser. But again, for some reason, doesn't really make sense. Anyone who understands and accepts the Torah and the halachic system and the authority of Chachamim and the like would never make such a cheshbon. But the reality is that there are some people that do make such a cheshbon. So the Rivash was asked about this, and as I said, it's quoted in the Beis Yosef. It's worth reading the whole Rivash, but the Rivash says that you shouldn't do this. The Shoel in that case asked, "Ve'ech lo tiknu shum tikun Oshum gader shel tahara b'pnuya kadesh lo yichashlu barabim achar shabal le anushkarish v'nogia babetz b'ktanachai malkos. Meaning, say, this issue of people having tashmish amita when unmarried is not new. It was happening during the days of the Rivash. So the Shoel asked, you know, we should encourage single women to go to the mikvah, and if we do that, then at least they'll be saved from an Isser Karis. And his answer is, I don't know what you're talking about, Kadesh Lo Yikashlu Barabim. This is going to lead to more people being Nechshel. Why? Because if they go to the mikvah, then they'll think, oh, it's not such an Isser Chamor, and they'll sleep together, and that's certainly wrong, and the like. And even though there might have been a case where once upon a time, Pnuyos were going to the mikvah, for example, when people were makbid on taharos, and in fact, in those days, he just cites the Gemara in Shabbos that said that perhaps in the Doros HaRishonim, because of taharos, women would go to the mikvah twice. Once when they're not a nida deoraisa, and then later when they're actually mutaros, but they were mevatel that tefila b'doros achronim because it's a chumra shevali de kula. It's going to lead to a michshol, and that's why you shouldn't do it. Now, some poskim quote this rivash, some achronim, and they say, you see from here that chachamim prohibited tvila lepnuyos. In other words, what they understood the Rivash as saying is that it's usur to allow or for pnuyos to go to the mikvah, and therefore perhaps mikvahs should prohibit it. Mikvahs should have rules that say no tvila for pnuyos because it's usur. Because it's usur, after all, that's what the Rivash says. Now, first of all, not everybody agrees that it's an isur. Even if you think the Rivash says it's an Isser, the Magen Avraham, it's in Yana Dioman, Simen Taf Reish Vav Sif Ches, discusses the practice of women going to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur, and many had the practice to go to the mikvah, just like men go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur, women also would go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur, even if they were penuyos or the like. So at least the Magen Avraham didn't seem to have a categorical prohibition against Pnuyos going to the mikvah. Others disagreed with that Magen Avraham. The Mat Ephraim says, no, it's better that they shouldn't be going to the mikvah for this reason that we said. And that is the minhag. I don't think, for the most part, I once met a woman who claimed that it was her minhag to go to the mikvah before Yom Kippur, even though she wasn't married. But for the most part, I think Minhag Yisrael is not for women not to go to the mikvah. But even if we don't follow the Magen Avraham, the question is whether this is a takana or just, and we accept the Rivash, after all, the Rivash is quoted in the Beis Yosef, or no, the Rivash doesn't say they were tiknu, right? If you look at the simple lashon of the Rivash, the Rivash was asked, why aren't they misakin that woman dafka should go to the mikvah? And the Rivash answered, that's a really bad idea. He didn't actually say it's aser for single women to go to the mikvah. He just said, there's no reason why we would encourage them to go to the mikvah. However, as I mentioned, there are some achronim, like the Estei Chemed, who do understand the Rivash as actually saying it's aser. This relates to an interesting question, the discussion in the Rivash, back and forth, and that's not the time to fully go into it, but the Geder of Halitei Rasha V'Yamos. There are a lot of fascinating questions along these lines of the poskim. One of my favorites, one of the most interesting ones, is a Shaila that was given to Rav Yitzchak Arama, the Akedas Yitzchak, also not generally known as a posek, but he was asked. Apparently there was some type of bezonos where he lived, and there were some people that thought that they should make sure that they go to the mikvah. Why? to prevent an Isser Chamor, a similar thing, and they should have rabbinic supervision, imagine that, rabbinic supervision of this Bezonos. And that way they would save people from Isser, because the fact is people were visiting and using their services, so let's try to prevent an Isser Chamor. And the Rivash, sorry, the Akedas Yitzchak says, no, Halitel Rasha V'yamos. In other words, we don't help people do averos. We don't help people try to find a kunz to do an Isser Kal and not an Isser Chamor. Halitel Rasha V'yamos. We try to get them to do tshuva. But somebody goes ahead and comes to you and says, you know, look, I only care about Isurim de Raisa. I don't care about Isurim de Rabbanan. So can you, you know, help me out? Teach me how to avoid that. So we don't. Halitei Ale Rashi V'Yamos. Certainly not to create an institution, rabbinic supervision. No, that's the wrong thing. Okay, if they are Rishayim and they go ahead and they do the Isur and they go to the Beis Onos, so that's their problem. Halitei Ale Rashi V'Yamos. There's a tshuva from the Chida. They had a cherem against mixed dancing in a certain city in Greece. The Chida traveled around to the different communities in Europe, Ashkenazi communities, Sephardi communities. He was actually a meshulach from Eretz Yisrael. And he would collect money for those living in Eretz Yisrael. So we have his travel logs, and he's a fascinating person in his own right, and he describes different communities. So one of the places that he describes was a certain town in Greece that asked him the following shaila. They went ahead and they made a cherem against mixed dancing. And he says, well, it worked for like 60% of the population, but 40% of the population ignored it. So now they had to decide whether they should renew the cherem, because on the one hand, it was preventing some people from mixed dancing, but those who were ignoring it were now doing an isser that's much more chamor, because they're in violation of a cherem as well. And again, he concludes, Halitei Ale Rasha V'yamos. We can't be focused on that. We have to help the people who want to keep halacha. So, certainly to be mesakein, tevila l'pnuyos is wrong. And perhaps even to allow them is wrong. They say over a story, I heard this recently, I think it was with Rav Elyashiv, but a single girl went to ask Rav Elyashiv if she's allowed to go to the mikvah, because she's doing it anyway. And Rav Elyashiv said, I can't say you're allowed to go to the mikvah. So on her way out, the Rebbetzin stopped her and said, but you're crazy if you don't. I don't think she was arguing with her husband. Rav Elyashiv says, I can't say you're allowed to. He didn't say, and so in a certain sense, I think that reflects the proper attitude. We can't make a takana for such people, like the Rivash says, but we don't necessarily prevent them from going to the mikvah. In the Riverdale mikvah, for example, I think they say single women shouldn't use the mikvah, but they also don't ask if you're single. They don't stop someone ever from going to the mikvah. And that's the balance. We don't want to ever create a michshol and in any way imply that we're sanctioning this, because it's usher. But at the same time, we're not going to stop someone from going to the mikvah. A somewhat related question, though I think really fundamentally very different, is when dealing with Bali Tshuva. So you have a couple that's becoming more observant. So if you told them to keep Hilchos Nidas, Paskin in the Shulchan Aruch, they're not yet ready for that, because that's a really big deal, right? She's Asura almost half the time. But if you told them that they could keep dinim d'oraisa, that's something that they could handle. That's not too onerous, because lamaisa, most people don't have tashmish amita when she's menstruating, and so 7 days afterwards she could go to the mikvah. So maybe, you know, a day or two extra, but that's not the end of the world. So the question that was posed to the Chazon Ish is, can you teach them dinim d'oraisa? So the answer is, which I think is very much in keeping with the Rivash and what we've said, is the following. You can open up a Chumash with them and learn with them the Parsha and say, this is what it says in Chumash, and according to the Chumash, you're allowed to go to the mikvah after 7 days. And they'll learn that, and you don't say anything else, and maybe that's what they'll do, fully. But you can never be mezayif the Torah. You can never say it's mutter. You could never say that you're allowed to go to the mikvah after 7 days, because that's already ziyaf Torah. It's not true. It's not true. She may not do that. So, and this relates to a lot of questions that you sometimes get from Bali Chuv along the lines, along their way, along their journey, which is something that's usser, you can never tell them that's mutter. Never. That's never permitted. But you could answer truthfully the question that they ask, and you don't always have to tell them more information that they don't yet know. So you could learn with them the psukim and explain to them what the psukim mean and teach them the din d'oraisa. You can't say it's mutter. You can't say you're allowed to do this. It's a fine balance. You have to sometimes answer questions, especially from Balei Tshuva, in a very meduyak way. Answer the question that they asked. Don't necessarily tell them more information that they're not yet ready to hear. But what you're not allowed to do is falsify the halacha in any way. Now, maybe you'll ask, well, who even says it's usser, there's a need for a penuya to go to the mikvah in the first place? Maybe there's no isser nida for penuyos. Now, why would you think that? Because you read the Torah Sashlamim. So the Torah Sashlamim says a remarkable thing, really astounding. The Gemara says, famously, that why is it that the Torah asered anida? So the Gemara says, Shalote ragil ba v'katzba. It's Gemara Nida, Perak Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, Adaf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. So Amra Taira, Te Temeya Shiva Yamim, Kedei Shete Chaviva Baila, Kishas Kenisasa Lachopa. The reason for the Isser Nida is to create excitement in marriage, and Memeila, if that's true, says the Torah Sashlamim, Vim Kain, Vipnuya, Shelo Shayach Tamze, Lote Temeya Shiva. That's the question. Now, what kind of question is that? So what is the answer? He basically gives two answers. He says, Va'od yesh lomar, d'meir b'shitas Reb Shimon amra, d'darish taimedra, k'di'is, his first answer says, well, okay, that's nida, but maybe she's a zava, and the like. His second answer is that this is going according to the opinion that's d'darish taimedra. Kedisa, bebav metzia, linyan mashkon fine. Imkain af beha les ilchus akremeir, lachein ein lachalik klal. Says, oh, this shaila would taka be talu in the machlokas whether darshin and time of dekra, below darshin and time of dekra. Remeir, who said lama nida sur l'shiva, was going like the opinion of time of dekra. And taka, he would have agreed that there's no iser for a, there's no iser nida upon a single woman, but we paskin lo darshin and time of dekra. That's his second answer. Now, to me, this is very astounding, because l'chora, these types of reasons are not the types of cases where we would apply the principles of darshin and time of dekra, lo darshin and time of dekra. There are actually some achronim and maybe even rishonim who think we do paskin darshin and time of dekra, but nobody would agree in a case like this. These are more, we talked about this I think in an earlier shiur, philosophical reasons for mitzvos, the perspective from the mitzvah from the outside. and they have to be compelling. For example, if you hold Darshin and Tamei Dekra, would you go to through all the mitzvos in the Sefer HaChinuch, the Tamei HaMitzvos, and start saying, okay, well, then it shouldn't apply here, and it shouldn't apply there, and it shouldn't... No. It's in the types of reasons that we even have a machlokas about Darshin and Tamei Dekra, machlokas Tanai, maybe even machlokas aposkim, is cases where, first of all, it's an absolutely compelling reason for the mitzvah, not something like this, which is somewhat, which is a, you know, more of a tam al pi drush. But anyway, it's a fascinating Drush HaShlomim that he says, actually, maybe it would be a machlokas. Anyway, one last question that we have to deal with in terms of this issue of D'oraisa versus D'rabbanan is another modern question, very interesting question, which is as follows. Let's say a woman is becoming pregnant through artificial insemination, and the time that she ovulates is before she's gone to the mikvah. For example, if you're trying to solve the problem of Orthodox for infertility using artificial insemination, she can't become pregnant because she can't go to the mikvah before she ovulates. So what's the solution? Artificial insemination. So the problem is that she's being inseminated before she went to the mikvah. So is that a problem? So I would have said, of course it's not a problem. You can't have Tashmish Shamita before you went to the mikvah. But this isn't Tashmish Shamita. And that is, in fact, the opinion of most Achronim. However, there were those who said, no, you can't become pregnant while you're in Nida. And then there were those that had a middle view. They said, well, no, technically speaking, you could become pregnant. You're definitely not going to be in violation of the Isser of Nida, but still, you would not want to create such a pregnancy because the child would be a Ben Nida. Now, what does a Ben Nida mean? So we'll have a chance to examine this more comprehensively when we get to Siman Kuf Tzadi Hei. But even though we paskin that a Ben Nida is not a mamzer, such a child is mutter bakal, it's an exception to the general rule, even though usually we say someone who is conceived through a relationship with an Isser Kares, the child's a mamzer, Nida is an exception, as the Gemara darshins. But there are sources that say that a Ben Nida will have bad midos, or the like, that there's some type of effect on the child. Later we'll talk about, when we talk about this more comprehensively, a discussion in the poskim in terms of shidduchim. Let's say you want to marry someone, and you know their parents aren't observant of taras hamishpacha, for example. They weren't observant of mitzvot. She was a baal shuva. So is that a reason not to marry such a person? Rav Moshe says no. If you think she has, you see she has good midos, and the likelihood she isn't a Ben Nida. How? Okay, maybe her mother went swimming. So she's not Midaraisa, she's okay. Anyway, different theories. We'll talk about that later. But in terms of our case, those poskim who were concerned about Ben Nida made the following suggestion. They said, let her go to the mikvah twice, just like they did in the days where they observed Taros. Specifically, she would go to the mikvah after she's no longer a Nida Midoraisa. So 7 days after she begins menstruating, she'll go to the mikvah. Then they'll do the artificial elimination. And then, obviously, I'll tell her in very clear terms that she's Asura Labayla until you go to the mikvah the second time after the Shiva Nikim are over. And that is what a number of poskim suggested. However, many, many poskim, including Rav Moshe and the Tshuva I sent you, Rav Avadia, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, disagreed with this conclusion. First of all, the Taz seems to not be concerned with the issue how did the Taz talk about artificial insemination? He didn't. But he talked about a different question. He was concerned that if a female sleeps on sheets that a male had slept on, and there happens to be some zera on those sheets, she could conceivably become pregnant, sort of like this Abra Bam Bati. There's a whole discussion in the Poskim whether that's possible as well. It's probably impossible, but there were those that were concerned for that possibility. And the Taz says you don't have to worry about it. And he quotes Rishonim that say that. And therefore, Rav Moshe, as well as others, say we paskin that way. Those that disagree with that, well, it's true. There are perhaps some who disagree, but their position is dehavel. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's no such thing. The stigma of ben nida comes from the violation of the Isser. There's no violation of the Isser because there's no Tashma Shamita. If there's no violation of the Isser, why would the kid become a ben nida? And therefore, you shouldn't do it. Not only don't you have to do it, but you shouldn't do it. Why shouldn't you do it? Because it's a chumra da'asi lidei kula. Why? Because once she goes to the mikvah, she might think, oh, it's not such a big deal anymore to be with my husband and the like. And that's a terrible thing. It's absolutely aser for her to be with her husband. Like the Ramban says, like the Rivash says, that's why they were mevatel doing two tefilos, and we still are mevatel doing two tefilos, and therefore this should not be done. So as I said, there are some poskim who do encourage two tefilos, but I think at least around here, the poskim advise against doing two tefilos because there's no need whatsoever. The kid wouldn't be a ben nida, and therefore we don't want to encourage it because it's a chumra hamevi lidei kula. Yes?
I just don't understand the exact layout of the days of the two times in the mikvah.
Okay. On Sunday, she starts menstruating, right? So when could you go to the mikvah midoraisa? So you tell me. Sunday's day one, Monday's day two, Tuesday's day three, Wednesday's day four, Thursday's day five, Friday is day 6, Shabbos is day 7. Motzi Shabbos, Midoraisa, she could go to the mikvah. Good. This woman happens to ovulate on Tuesday, right? So she's not yet going to be able to go to the mikvah on Tuesday. There haven't been Shiva Nikiyim. But since she ovulates on Tuesday, they're going to do artificial insemination on Tuesday. It's only going to work if they do it on Tuesday. If they wait till after she comes back from the mikvah, which is going to be Wednesday night, it's too late. Won't work. So she's going to be inseminated on Tuesday. But the problem is, she hasn't gone to the mikvah yet, right? So, midi'oraisa, she could go to the mikvah on Monday, but midi'rabbanan, she can't. So some poskim say, this is what we should do. Tell her to go to the mikvah on Monday, and we'll tell her she's not allowed to be with her husband. But obviously, whether you're not a ben nida, presumably doesn't depend on the takana d'rabbanan. The takana d'rabbanan of Chumra de Rabbi Zeira does not make the child into a ben nida. It's a harchaka. So, therefore, the child won't be a ben nida because mid-oraisa, she's not a nida. And then she'll go to the mikvah a second time on Wednesday, and then she'll be permitted to be with her husband. That is what some poskim said she should do in this case.
And Moshe is saying that she's going to think that after the first time she's going to.
And right. A, there's no need, because the kid won't be a ben nida. There's no such thing as a ben nida. Ben nida comes from being over on a yeser nida. She's not over on a yeser nida. The kid won't be a ben nida. And you'll say, okay, why not? It can't hurt. Taka, there are some poskim that are machmir. He says, no, we don't want to ever encourage women to go to the mikvah when they won't be allowed to be with their husbands, because that's a chumra, maybe lidei kula. Yes?
When it comes to people who took the rebush as an official iser, how are you matir? What's not going to be matir kala? Meaning before she's actually married.
Fashida wasn't said for a kala.
But it's a big tzarchia.
No, it's not a tzarchia.
Does she have to be a couple of days before the wedding? Let's say yes, and then
nah.
Like meaning.
Nah.
Be
no, it means that we don't allow Pnuyas to go to the mikvah so they could have Tashra Shamitas at Pnuya.
Well, if a woman doesn't do a Hes Tara and she goes to the mikvah, she can become Torah Midaraisa?
No, you need to do a Hes Tara after the 7 days.
It is a very Rishon Tzeis.
Presumably. We'll discuss whether Hafsik Tara is or Din D'Oraisa or Rabbanan when we talk about Hafsik Tara. But let's say she does a Hafsik Tara after day 7. It's easy enough. And then she goes to the mikvah. D'Oraisa, she'll be Mutaris.
Isn't the question basically is about if it, in terms of just trying to save these people from Averas, anyway, if they don't, are not doing Hafsik Tara, then going to the mikvah is not really helping them.
Well, no. If Klapish Maya Galia, she's no longer bleeding, so then the mikvah L'maisa is effective.
Oh, okay.
Right?
I don't know.
But yeah, I assume these pnuyos that go to the mikvah do a hafsik tara, and then they go to the mikvah. Okay. Yeah.
Based on the regards to another thing, why is it sometimes that mikvahs will have a rule that we, let's say, not makbid on chatzitzas, and we won't stop you if you have chatzitzas?
So there's two things. There's first of all, we'll talk about this when we do chatzitzos. But this question comes up on two levels. The general question that it comes up is women who don't want to cut their nails. So in that case, it's not a chatzitza really, mikra din. There's a minhag to be machmir, but assuming your nails are clean, so in that case, even then we tell them they should cut their nails, but mikvahs won't necessarily stop them from going to the mikvah. Then there's another question: if you actually had a chatzitza, that's pretty rare, but there too, we might go ahead and tell the women, you know, you're not allowed to go to the mikvah with a chatzitza, but let's say it's chatzitza de Rabbanan, and she wants to go. Are we going to stop her? We might not stop her, but we certainly are not. Rabbi Willigs thinks that in cases where women are going to the mikvah where they shouldn't, so the custom is that the mikvah lady, after the woman comes up from the mikvah, says tahora or muteris or something like that. So the mikvah lady should not say that. Anytime we think she really shouldn't be going to the mikvah as she is now. So you don't say that. But we don't say she can't go to the mikvah because of that. We're not going to bar her from going to the mikvah. And again, that's a pshara that makes sense. We certainly do not want to in any way encourage this. Not only don't we want to encourage it, but we want to make clear that we discourage this. We think it's wrong. We discourage it. But does that mean that we're going to bar them from using the mikvah? No. Again, could be different mikvahs at different policies. But that's where Ray Willig thinks. The mikvahs, we're not going to turn anybody away, refuse them entry. We're not going to ask. But we do want to make clear that this is not something we sanction. And one way that we do that is with the mikvah lady in that case shouldn't say tahora. Okay. One minor ha'ara, this is the last thing on our siman, which is really a ha'ara that belongs in Kuf Tzadi, so we're not gonna be marach on it, but since it comes up over here, I'm just gonna draw your attention to it. An interesting diuk in Simen Kuf Bei Gimel Sif Aleph. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Isha Shiyatza Dan Mi Mikora Bei Bonus Bei Miratzon Tumeya V'hu Shetargish Bi Yitziyaso. So why does the Shulchan Aruch say she becomes a Surah if she has a Hargasha? After all, Midrabanan, they were Misakein, that Dan Bali Hargasha is also a Surah. So it's true the Shulchan Aruch will clarify that later, but the halacha as formulated in the Shulchan Aruch isn't really true, isn't really precise. So if you take a look at the Taras HaShlamim, he points out, you'll notice, by the way, when I first started learning Halachas Nida, I got confused about it. You'll see a lot of poskim referring to the Minchas Yaakov, and what they're referring to is the Taras HaShlamim, because he wrote both works. So a lot of times you'll see the poskim, like the Plessy, or in this case, if you look at the Gilyon Marsha, he refers to the comments of the Minchas Yaakov. So that's the Taras HaShlamim. And likewise, you'll see, if you look here, also in the Gilyon Marsha in the first siman, he refers to the comments of the Tiferes Yisrael, and that's the Kresi Uplessy, written by Rav Yonasan Ibeshitz. That's what his work on Hilchos Nida is called, but it's in the standard Gracie Uplaces.
And his son, Dan?
Tiferes Yisrael's his son?
Grandson.
It's not Rav Yonos and Eibershitz?
No, his grandson put together.
The Sabres together with something.
Right. Right,
they just called the whole Seder. Right?
They called it Tiferes Yisrael, but in this case, it's the comment, in this case, when the Minchas Yach, when the Gilyon Rosh Hashanah is referring to it, it's referring to the comments of the place. It's referring to the comments of Rav Yonos and Eibershitz. So, anyway, so some wanted to be Medayek, the following Diyuk, that you see from here, that, look at the Taras HaShlamim, Minchas Yaakov, Afalgav, the first one. Afalgav and Mizbar Lakamant and Kuf Tzadi. The Afalgav did below her Gisha. She's Tameya. Rak Bekesim Be'al Malgufa. Oal Chaluka Tameya. Hainu Kashir. Gadol Kegris. Ba'od Kavur Lakaman. Va'amachaber. De'bal Omar. She Tameya. Filu Betipas Dam Kechardal. Al Kain Kasav Bistam. Ushatargish. In other words, over here the Shulchan Aruch says, have Hargasha, you're Tameya even if it's a Tipas Dam Kechardal. That's true. Now, what about the din de rabbanan of tumas ksamim? That's only if it's kegris v'od. Less than a gris, the din of ksamim doesn't apply. And therefore, this din is actually true. Even on some level, at least, halach lemaisa, even mid rabbanan. So, the Rav Yonos and Eibershitz disagrees with that diak. And that's the mashmos of the shach. If you take a look at the shach, Sifkan Beis, Achitargish, Hainu Deraisa. And the Gilead Marsha quotes Rav Yonos and Eibershitz, after Pachos Mikha Gris, Kevin Diodashi Yatzmegufa, Yeshba Misham Kasan. What about the Shir Gris? The Shir Rak Lahotzi Misafik Macholos. In other words, Dam that's Vadim Migufa, Dam that's Vadim in Makor, that's Timea Midrabhanan, even if it's Pachos Mikha Gris. So, that very important debate, which we'll return to in Simon Kuftadi, is debated over here at the beginning of Kuf Tzadi, Kuf Pei Gimel, in terms of the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, an interesting question. Okay, with that, we will end Kuf Pei Gimel and turn to Kuf Pei Ches.